All right, here we are. This is Cohen Meander. I'm Jason Demro, and another morning, another wonderful morning talking to Heavenly Father this morning and thanking Him for all of my blessings. And I feel pretty good that I'm figuring a few things out as they need to come. You know what? It's just a question of just doing what needs doing. Let's see. Because I am really grateful for my life. I grouse and complain sometimes. I need not to do that because it kind of obfuscates your gratitude, you know? It's like, oh yeah, he says he's grateful, but look at how he's behaving. And you go, yeah, that makes total sense to me. So, you know what? Just be grateful. It's an interesting world. I'm not sure exactly which character sketch I want to try to do today to get more of a sense for what prophecy character, what they do. I think about Corin, which ends up being, I don't know if she's a main character, but she's certainly a character that one better get a good sense for because she is, see, I don't know if she's, it's almost like she's an instrument, you know? She is, some of the last breath of matrons. She's still playing the same old game that matrons always play. You know, it's kind of like modern politics today. And you go, don't these people understand that stuff doesn't work anymore? And you go, you know what? Powerful people work really hard to get to the level they're at, and they really honor the work and the understanding, all that stuff, everything that took to get there. And they don't turn on a dime particularly. In fact, almost none of them turn on a dime. Most of them don't turn at all. The way these things change is other people who used other ways to get to where they are and who don't have a personal investment in how things were, those are your next leaders. And these things change very slowly. You know, this is why the concept of evolution, although it sounds really smart and really plausible, it's like atheism. It sounds really, really smart. It seems like it answers a lot of questions, you know. Everybody says God will take care of you, and when you see evidence that God isn't really taking care of people, you know, the semi-intelligent, trendy thing to do is just drop God and say, hey, man, there's nothing to it. God isn't stopping evil from happening. And you're going, he never did. He was never the sort to do that. Everybody says, oh, God isn't going to let me do the wrong thing because God loves me. And you go, you know what? I can demonstrably say that's not true. And you go, oh, that means God doesn't love me. And you go, and that means I don't have to do anything he says because God's a jerk. I don't have to do what he says. And you go, no. It says, here's, you know, it says, God tells you the right thing to do, leads you to act on your own. This is such a trend in, like, the parables, for instance. Every time the Lord of the Manor would give you instructions, give you a job to do, and then he would leave. He seems like he would go off on a long journey or something and leave you to take care of things. But then he comes back. And if you've been working it, if you've been doing what you've been asked to do, if you do it even without God looking down on you and making comment or pushing you one way or the other, rewards come, big rewards, which is exactly what he promises. And does he help? Does he help righteous people along the way? He does. You know, it isn't as big, flashy, and glamorous as a lot of people want it to be, you know. Look at me, I'm being so righteous, and look how God's blessing me. And you're going, no, no. So it's almost like, you know, I stopped talking about the wonderful miracle. It was a practical, yeah, it was a miracle of my little Sandy car. And I just got the impression that people just got weird, like, who the heck does he think he is? And you're going, and I said, I'm not anybody. It says, all I know is I prayed and asked for help with this particular issue, and I got it in miraculous ways. And am I really grateful for it? Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Because this life is a test. Come on. You're gonna know and you're gonna feel it as you go along that although God will help you, and sometimes he'll help you in the little things too. Often enough, it's in the little things. And mostly just to say, I'm here. I want to help you. I'm looking out for you. And it's like, this is great. But I think that's only particularly for the righteous or for those who can be turned. I don't think he is particularly helpful to those who aren't trying, who aren't righteous. Yeah, so. Oh. You know, I was looking for all this, for these pieces of land that are interesting out in the boonies. And, you know, after it, it's like, what were you doing that for? What on earth is that except some kind of weird autistic obsession? I'm sure Lisa's praying counter to me saying, Father, please get Jason to stop thinking along these lines. That just makes me nuts because I refuse to live out there with him. And you go, and if Lisa refuses to live out there with them, for me, what's the point? What's the point? So, so all that stuff fell apart. It just didn't happen. And, you know, it's probably for the best. And, pardon me. I think beyond all that, I need to just go ahead and just talk about one of the characters here. So, Ennis is a man of good duty. It's good that he's in Waikiki. He is, and the fact that he is the leader is a wonderful thing. You know, he's the right guy for the job. It's like when I think about leadership, I should be the leader. And it's good that I'm not. Probably not the right kind of person. So, but Ennis is concerned about the community itself. He takes the covenant of Waikiki extremely seriously. And this is really important because he's having to step way back in time and almost refound Waikiki. Kind of the vignette writing style is just well suited to the way I approach this. So, who is that? Meg Cabot woman? I don't know if she's changed her writing style. You know, to be honest, I wouldn't. Although, you have to understand, if something's just kind of a fluke, like the Princess Diaries, the books, I tried reading the books and I didn't think much of them because I'm not into diaries, which is what it basically is. It's just a big diary. There's a girl talking about how she feels about her grandmother. She doesn't really think much of the grandmother. And then you go off and you see the movies. And, you know, mostly the Gary Marshall movies. He took the actual premise of the book and he turned it into something far more interesting. I would say most of the people who read the books probably didn't like the movies. They were two completely different people. And the fact that a movie was being made of it was probably, you know, and most times it is pretty disingenuous. It's like, I really like the Contact movie. I didn't really like, and then I said, well, I'm going to go get the book. You know, I got the book and I didn't like the book. The book was all about women in science and stuff like that and how badly they're treated and stuff like that. And although there was a few details in the book that I liked, the whole thing that you were talking to people from Vega, that's just where they set up their little communication station, was near Vega. And the actual movie, the whole thing that that she was a woman, I even think was a feature of the movie. The fact that she was crazy, the fact that she was going down a road of endeavor that everybody thought was just stupid. That was one of the main features of it. You know, the fact that she was a woman was nothing to it, which I think was what they were hoping to kind of do, was ultimately say, you know what, quit bellyaching about the fact that that things are sexist. I said, there's a lot of other things going on. And in her case, it was because she had this amazing mind and Drummond especially thought that she was wasting it. And her whole thing is my life. She says, I get to spend my time however I want to. And they said, you know. And I've ran across this a few times. I've had some relations occasionally with wacky doctors. And I don't mean doctors like medical doctors. You can dismiss those guys. I'm grateful that they're out there. You know, when you get really sick, it's really great to have a doctor. Do you want to go to them on a regular basis? No. But anyway, I don't. And we'll call them PhDs to make a differentiation. These PhDs who do really amazing work, you know, and are really avant-garde, and they're treated like garbage by the academic industry. And it functions like an industry, you know. Various grants are given out, usually by government. Some of them just absolutely stupid. A lot of it's politically driven. You always hear the stories of somebody who does something really, really, some kind of research they've been doing for 10 years that was so immensely obvious. And it's like, so you're going out here to try and reprove common knowledge again. Of course, sometimes there's they come up with something really off the wall. They said, look, I've seen this and look at this. Which just goes to show you that an orthodoxy is only useful in that there's steadier money in orthodoxy. Beyond that, you really don't have much. Well, sun's just right at the right point to blind you. Oh. So anyway, what was I talking about? Westland. So Westland. He's a good guy for the job. And he was willing to implore God about what to do when his friend, I forget his name, decides to take his family and several other families and just leave. And they actually have a good argument for why they're doing it. But it is not keeping a covenant when they come back and they go, well, we've heard these stories about how it goes. It was actually Molisinda and Davor who brought back reports of what was going on down there. They really didn't have very much contact with first home people ever. Occasionally. Anyway, so there's a lot of people. And it isn't that they hadn't had some reports, for Pete's sake. Sometimes the Mariners brought people from first home. Not often at all. Mostly people from outside who were wanting to escape outside. But that they were brought into the covenant and that they could be blessed through this covenant. And be among people who were of the same ilk. This is important. This is almost a Zion concept. A wonderful place to be where people have made and keep these covenants. I know it was must have been getting interesting for Ennis, knowing that there was probably an underswell of these sorts of people. It makes you think, what do like, you know, LDS bishops think? Because to a large extent, every gathering of people who are Latter-day Saints have a mix of people, all kinds. I don't want to say that the church has got quite liberal, because I don't think it has, but I think much more broadly than previous generations, church is taking seriously that visitor's welcome, and that you don't throw out people and you don't make people feel unwelcome, because you just don't know. Number one, people come at you from all kinds of places, and you just don't know how far they're going to go or if they're even really all that interested. Some of them are less than, you know, kids who joined the church when their parents got baptized or something like that. That's one circumstance that can come. And although they went to church somewhat, sometimes, they didn't stay with it for one reason or another. I have no idea what those reasons might be. To a certain extent, it really doesn't matter. I'm not a very good formula missionary, for instance. I put stuff out there. But I have absolutely no idea if any of it is going to be, you know, is going to be compelling. I was going to say, wow, you know, I don't know who's going to join the church because of me. Without just me just doing the normal stupid stuff. That's why I have a problem with Dave Moore. And you go, well, then why are you writing a character like Dave Moore? You go, because it's kind of an interesting type. You know, they say, oh, make sure that in your stories you include, you know, characters that have the attributes of certain archetypes. And I don't think I really do. Like, you know, I say your writing kind of looks to appeal to nobody. If it ever gets popular, which it never has, I don't know where that would come from. Anyway. So, Westland has this weird undercurrent that he's got to deal with. That there is a growing group of people who are just kind of Wakey born and raised, and I guess they really don't. It's a hard life, and really rugged. And for those who don't particularly have proclivities that way, it's just as well that people leave. I don't think this would have been the first time that people have wandered off and have gone away. I think this is the first time when it seemed organized and a large group, almost to the point of saying, you know, this is like a democracy, and we want to change the way things are. We want Wakey to be different. The only thing that saved, I think, Wakey from becoming that sort of a thing was that it was a harsh reality. It was just the way it was. And it was much more easier, and I'd say far more logical, that if somebody wasn't really committed to the program, that they would just up and leave at some point and go away. And that's something we probably need to explore, this whole thing. Ennis really is the personification of Wakekeep and the Wakekeep Covenant. He kind of exudes this. And it makes him kind of hard to live with, you know. Tessarine ends up being a real example of I don't like what this place is, even though she is the perfect physical type for this, you know, strong, big boned, tall. I don't know if tall really matters, but it must on some level. Anyway, she was physically well suited for Wakekeep, but I don't think she had the mindset for it. So, I need to look right now. Oh, that's interesting. I wonder what more they've got going there. So anyway, nobody expects me to be running right now. Okay. Well, that's why when we go down the first home, we lose Tessarine, and we lose Tessarine pretty quickly. And although Ennis is notably sad, they haven't had children, that kind of makes it so it's not difficult. And that might be her thing, too. Tessarine is so athletic. She's out there tangling with the guys. Now, some of the women do that. They're not required to, like the men are. The men are absolutely buff, you know, guys. And like that, Tessarine has been so athletic trying to keep up with the boys that, you know, that she isn't having children. And that's probably a blessing in that she's just walking away from it here later. So yeah, Waykeep, its maintenance and keeping it going is vital to Anis. It enlivens him. To the point to where when Tessarine just kind of wanders off, he doesn't get particularly weird about it. He sees the attraction of the convocation culture. And that it focuses on her rather than her husband. I think she was getting more weary of being the leader's wife. And that she really wanted she really wanted more. And just going out and being as big and as tough and as good in the path as the men were, even better sometimes, just wasn't fulfilling enough. So yeah, there really isn't a lot to talk about, Anis, except Anis doesn't have the kind of prophecies that Davor does. And it's left to Davor to make sure these things happen. Anis is kind of singular in his, in what he does. And that's kind of what makes him the great leader for Waykeep. He's like, all right, guys, let's get up. Get your scythes ready. Our lookout says another group is coming to come through the pass. It used to just be individuals, stuff like that. This is now more pointed. These are more pointed types. Much larger groups coming through. And these guys decide to come through as an army, which is a bit new, a large army, relatively speaking. Not just like a squad, but an entire division type thing, where it's like, oh my gosh, hundreds up to thousands of soldiers coming with, you know, women and children and artisans, stuff like that, coming right at their tail. The whole thing of the occasional person going up there and barely escaping alive to come back down the far side of the past and saying, There's something amazingly wicked up there. And as long as I stopped coming forward, it would leave me alone. Oh, I missed my turn. You know what? I'm going to come this way. You know, it's okay if I miss my turn. This way's just as good. So, yeah, there really isn't a whole lot to say about our friend Anis. He is probably the most typecast one. And, you know, he goes and he becomes this great warrior. And sport fighting at first home. mostly thing that kind of, and it's treated like opium for the masses type of thing. So that's where that comes from. I'm thinking of when Ennis goes over the over the sea or over the channel and takes on a group of people who've gotten through the pass. It's not surprising they've gotten through the pass. Ennis isn't there to be the leader. Not that they don't have a good thing, but they've lost a lot of people. And the next group that came through, rather than sacrifice those who kept the covenant, they went ahead and let some people through. And got a message to Ennis saying that they need to be rounded up and captured. And that's exactly what happens. And this really ends up being I don't know if you call it a test, but it could be a test for the converts. I'm doing air quotes, converts, who go down. Of course, Westland and Davor are there, and they fight. And they're part of this interesting slaughter, because it is a slaughter. The invaders are camped, and it's like they're on some kind of a drug. And you just go in and you just slit out of their throats, stab them in the heart, whatever you want to do to stop them there. It is. It's a wholesale slaughter. Westland's a little horrified. Davor is horrified a lot. And doesn't really get particularly involved in the actual work of it. There are definitely separates into two groups, and one of them, of which Davor, I don't know if he's really a leader, but he is among those who takes these people back to first home. And of course, you know, he isn't going back to Waykeep ever again. But Westland says, I want to come one day. Of course, his dad says, no, you're not supposed to go. I see you on first home later. And Ennis says, if your dad saw it, it's probably the way it's supposed to be. And my heart tells me so. It says, so you need to stay here. Even though Westland really wanted to go to Waykeep right then and let that be what happened. Of course, if he would have gone, then who knows what would have become of Oceanicus. They hadn't done anything yet. They hadn't done anything yet. They were married, but they hadn't conceived. And the conception is coming. So we need to remember that. That makes more sense to make sure that Wessel has to go back to at least impregnate Sienna. Lanalil goes too, but he is definitely one of the ones to say, no, I don't like these sensibilities. I don't like this kind of stuff. I'm a little crazy, but I'm not that crazy. So, I don't know quite else what to think. Anyway, this goes back, and we don't hear from him again, because he's kind of out of picture. you know, if you have a big overarching theme in prophecy, it really has to do with consequences. Consequences of our choices. And there's a lot of different people, there's a lot of different choices to make. And what comes of them. Isn't that true for our lives too? We make covenants or don't. And therefore we can only access the Lord's real care for us if we make covenants with him. Then he feels responsible for us. Until that moment arrives, not so much. So let me tell you, I probably need to go ahead and stop this one. Because I'm getting a lot of death periods in that I'm thinking about things. So we've got Ennis and consequences. I'm going to pull over here and write this stuff down. And then I'm going to get back on the road. Getting to my labors for the day. All right, so talk to you later. Jason Nemro, Cohen Meander, have a great day.